All right, we're in Colossians 3. We ended up with verse 19 last week, 2 weeks ago, I guess. Sixteen people here tonight. It is a blessing. We had looked, in fact, we'll get to verse 19. Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them. Well, let's see. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4 husbands in here. And then we have some guys who are considering being a husband.
Is there anything about wives? We just talked about wives being bitter against their husbands.
No, it doesn't say that. Yep. They had to be taught to love their husbands.
Right.
But what, you know, let's put it this way. When I first got married, I looked at that verse, who could ever be bitter against their wife? About 6 months later, I was wondering, how can a man not be bitter against his wife?
It took 6 months.
Yeah. 6 months to get back to the verse. But again, what is bitterness? Bitterness is an anger that you haven't dealt with right. You haven't either forgiven it or put it in the proper place. You're still holding on. Usually it's something you can't discuss with them. And let's face it, everybody in their marriage or in any relationship has certain things they just can't talk about. And you just can't, okay? And every once in a blue moon, a door will open and the two of you can talk. You express these things and say them. It's the right timing. And some of you have been with me the longest. You know that one of my statements is timing is everything. It's just that ability, timing, knowing when the time is. And so what often happens, you know, a man will go ahead and he's used to operating on his own and everything. Suddenly that woman's with him. She's made decisions. She's done things. He's upset about what she's done. She doesn't see it that way. He doesn't want to have a state of constant fighting, but yet he can't let go of it. And it turns him bitter. So the thing is, don't be bitter with your wife. Don't do that. You want to destroy your life? You won't destroy hers. Hers will be more miserable because you're a miserable person now. But it doesn't really destroy her life. She just wonders what's wrong with you. If you cannot discuss it with them, then you're probably going to have to let it go. If it's something that comes up periodically, you better find a way to discuss it, okay? You'd better find a way to bring it up. You'd better find a way to deal with it, okay? There are certain things you just have to take on the chin. I think everybody's heard my story at least a couple times, but I love the story of Darren Truel and his wife. And and again, Darren, when you see him, he's just a Mr. Magoo. If you're going to have a national nerd contest, I mean, he'd probably win it, you know, hands down, he'd win the contest. And so, of all that, Jennifer Williamson falls in love with him, of all people. And Jennifer was just a beauty queen. There's no other way to describe her. I mean, just a stunningly beautiful girl.
I'm a blonde.
Yeah, and I mean a blonde. She's,
oh,
yeah.
Very
blonde.
Yeah.
Blonde and then
let me put it this way. The two of them would fit well together, okay? They would definitely do well together. Yeah, but again, when she fell in love with Darren, she fell in love with him. I mean, just head over heels in love with him. And here's one of the things. She talked about being pregnant, and when a woman's pregnant, anytime, there's a lot of discomfort, things that go on. There's extra people in there that didn't used to be in there. So at one point, she's standing in a party and she farts. No other way to say it. And it's one of those things where everybody heard it. All right? She didn't mean it to be that way. She doesn't have control. She's heavily pregnant. You know, I've known a lot of guys from, boy, they stink, you know, or whatever else. You know what Darren did? He grabbed his rear end and said, excuse me, and ran out of the room. And everyone thought he did it and mocked him and laughed at him. And she just loved him. He just took all that shame on himself. That's my shame, okay? And so it's that idea again of having that attitude about the woman you're married with. And, you know, that, and then the beauty is her strengths are your strengths. Ideally, and this is where, again, I go back to this thing, the woman is the glory of the man. Not somewhere in the last 4 months, I had a man go back in that office, and I didn't think I'd ever have this again. And he gave me the down country on his wife. He just had, he pointed to her, and he explained all the things wrong with her and everything else. And she just sat there and, you know, just as cold as could be. And when it got done, she loved me like she hasn't loved a preacher ever before. And, you know, and I just explained to him how that it's amazing that a woman could even live with him. Okay, that he could have the best woman in the world. If they lived with him for 6 months, I can't imagine her being anything left in her life. And, you know, and the, you know, a woman's the glory of the man. How could any woman ever succeed being married to him? How could any woman ever be anything being married to him? There's no backbone. There's no nothing there. There's nothing of that kind. And she told me later, she said, you know, she said it's the first time, and she mentioned how many years anyone's ever defended me. And you know what? He was a wise man. He took it right. He understood that thing. He realized, you know, you're right. My wife is the way she is because she just married an idiot, and no woman could flourish. Mm. You know, men will often sit in a big group, and they'll look around and say, boy, you know, if I was married to so-and-so, you know, my home wouldn't be like it is now, or blah, 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 blah. You know, and they think this thing, you know, you can take the best wife in the house of God or anywhere and let that man marry her, and within a year, she'll be what his wife is, okay? Probably without the virtues, probably without the talents, all right? But all the faults that he didn't like his wife about, probably she'll have them, all right? Why? The woman's the glory of the man. Okay, she's a reflection of it. So then men sit around and they end up getting bitter with their wife. Well, they're this, they're that, and everything else. Well, it never occurred to you, you could improve yourself and maybe she could improve. Maybe you're the one holding her back. Maybe you're the reason that she can't ever get ahead of where she's at. So be not bitter with your wives. Be not bitter against them. It says, verse 20, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord. Okay? So obeying your parents in the Lord, just that idea that, and, you know, there hits you at a point in time, and this is where it's been hard for some of you in this church, because you haven't had good parents. Okay? You haven't. It's not that everything was wrong with your parents. That isn't the case. If you were to look, you think you could find strengths of things. Ruth Ann today, we got a thing in the mail today that we'd ordered and thought it was going to be put together and turned out to be a bunch of flat pieces of board with all the perforated cutouts and you had to glue it all together. She just had a ball doing that. I couldn't have made her happier if I tried, okay? The only Zane would have loved it, you know, but she loved it. You know what? Because she had a daddy that just taught her to do that kind of stuff, the exact way to do it. And you know what? The man had 1,000 things wrong with him. If we have 100 conversations about him, 99 and a half are talking about the faults he had. But that's something he did right. And he sat and taught her how to do those things and taught her the right way to do it. He taught her to laugh at herself. He taught her to do that, how to laugh at yourself when things are going wrong. And
now that you mention it, Pastor, you once said to me, if you were to watch someone long enough, you can always find at least one pro with them.
That's right. That's exactly right. So the thing is, it's hard when you've had parents that really have done it wrong and whored in their lives and committed fornication. But committed fornication and railed on you and caused all sorts of blame you for things you didn't do and, you know, all those kind of things that go on. So it's hard when you have that. But I remember one time, the ladies back there, when we used to have 6 o'clock in the evening services, the ladies would have a Proverbs class. It just never has worked otherwise, but they'd have a Proverbs class. And one day the ladies came out and asked the question, it says, forsake not the law of your mother. How do you do that when your mother was just a loser?
Oh, boy.
And I asked them this question. I said, If your mother was drowning in quicksand right now, and she called out to you, don't come where I am, would you say, oh, you're a loser, I can walk over there? No. Chances are, from their broken place they were, they did give you some good advice. They couldn't do it themselves. They didn't have the ability to do it themselves. They probably violated it all the time themselves. But they gave you some good advice. And look for that good advice, okay? Don't just say, well, you never did it. You know, look at the guy you hung out with. Look what you did over here. You know, okay, go ahead and do that all you want. Just, you know, see to it the next generation has to live through all the nonsense. Or you can take the law of your mother and say to yourself, you know, these things she did say, they were right. They were right. She didn't have the ability to live it, but maybe by the grace of God, I can live it. Maybe I can do those things that she herself, drowning in quicksand, trying to get me not to stand on that ground and do it. So the next thing that makes it hard is if you grew up in a home where you resented authority because they were hypocritical and blame you for things you didn't do, scream at you one day for doing something, the next 3 days didn't even notice whether you did it or not, then walk back in. And the hardest thing is, and this almost all women go through this, you'll go ahead and tell your kids, I want the room cleaned a certain way. Okay, that's fine. Everybody understood. And then you ignore it for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then you're in a bad mood one day and you walk in screaming, I've told you over and over again never to do it this way. And your heels will just hate you. Because you walked in day after day after day and didn't say anything about it. Now you're in a bad mood, so you're going to scream about it. Okay, and men do that kind of thing. So the thing is, it makes it hard, especially when you grew up with that kind of thing, and that kind of thing was going on in your life, and, you know, they're trying to defend themselves, and you remember when you told them that. That's right. 4 weeks ago. Ignored it all that time. Walked in and out when we were doing it the other way, but now today it's going to be a horrible thing or whatever else. And if you grew up under that kind of thing, then you stand there and you resent parents. You resent that kind of authority. The problem with that is, if you resent authority, you're never able to exercise it. People who've hated authority, when they're given it themselves, can't do it. They scream, they yell, they carry on. Why? Because they always hated authority. The idea is, and here's the other big mistake. When Tanya tells Josh to do something, Josh is old enough now that in most circumstances, he could ask a question. Okay? He's got to have wisdom, because all women have times, don't ask him anything, all right? But then he gives Tanya a chance, okay? You know, Hannah and Ruth Ann always laugh about the time Ruth Ann hadn't slept in so long, she walked in and told Hannah to give the dog a bath. She said the dog's name. I think she wanted to give Timothy a bath when he was a baby. She put, Mom, the dog? Don't sass me back. So finally, Hannah's got the dog in the bathtub. They went, what are you giving the dog a bath for? You know, and they laugh about that. Now, it was a funny thing or whatever. But, you know, sometimes parents give wrong mistakes. And you know what? An older child should be able to say something. Both should discuss it. And then the parent seals it. What if it's a mistake? Do it anyway. Okay? Do it anyway. Do the mistake. You know what? It's a lot easier for the parent to realize, yeah, that really was a mistake. Boy, we shouldn't have put that out last night. Now look at it, it's ruined. It rained. We shouldn't have put it out. But they obeyed you. They told you one time, I think it's going to rain. So, are you sassing me? Just get out. Okay, well, we'll just go put it outside. Next morning, it's all ruined. But you obeyed. And you know what? It's a lot easier for that parent now to acknowledge, hey, I did wrong, you had it right, if you handle it that way. For a child, it's hard to learn that kind of obedience. Your parents aren't giving you orders because they're smarter than you. They're giving you orders because they run the household, and that's the order that God gave. That's why they're given orders. It will do you good from time to time to obey orders that weren't smart. It'll do you good to do that. Back in the 1800s, the United States sent an army contingent up to the Arctic Circle. Up through Canada, it was one of the first times that Arctic explorers had ever gone that high. And it is a classic study now, studied in officer schools and everything else, of everything going wrong. And what ended up happening is they ended up getting trapped, snowed into a place. The officers made stupid decisions. Forbid enlisted men to go outside of the camp, whereas officers could, and there were enlisted men who, if they could have gone out of the camp, would have done so much more for them. And then the officers got hard-headed. Well, there was one sergeant in that group that it was all said and done, and it was all studied. Most of the men died. They finally came back down. And the war colleges commend the sergeant because he kept the discipline. He would not let the men disobey the officers. He kept the discipline, and they said he's the reason anyone survived in that whole thing. He retired as a general from the Army. Okay, but again, he could have been with the others and revolted, and then all discipline would have broken down and not a man would have lived out of the thing. Yeah. So it was the guy who said, yes, these are stupid orders. These are dumb. No matter what the orders were, they were snowed in. Okay. But the whole idea was he understood if we lose the fabric of military order here, we're all dead. He understood that. And that's something that everyone needs to understand in a family. You lose the fabric of that family. You lose the idea that Dale's in charge, Amy's next under him, that she guides the house, she gives orders how the house is to be guided. If that's lost, it's all lost. It's gone. You've destroyed everything. You can go on, you can say, ha ha ha, look at this, I got a car a year earlier than they said, and I got to go to a party that they didn't want me to go to. But it's over, it's done. Your life's destroyed. You've ruined something that never should have been ruined. You've destroyed it. So the thing is, children, obey your parents in the Lord. Do that. Okay? Follow what they say. You will thank yourself for it 1,000 times later in life that you did that. Ask all of us who went ahead and just did whatever we wanted and skirted around and broke every rule and, you know, just agony. All right. Verse 21. Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. And let me tell you something here. Kids do dumb things. Okay? It just comes with the territory. They just do dumb things. If you don't think so, and how many people have heard me say this before, look back at your life 10 years ago. You're the biggest idiot you ever met in your life. If you look back at yourself 10 years ago, you'll just say to yourself, there's never been a bigger idiot than me. You know, guys your age, Josh, can look back 2 years. You know, just look back 2 years, you say, gosh, the biggest idiot I ever met was Joshua Spencer. Well, first of all, keep this in mind. That 5 years from now, you're going to look back on yourself, who you are right now, and you're going to see yourself as an idiot. You're going to be stunned how dumb you were, how you just could, oh my goodness, how could I have been blind to this stuff? That's what you were, okay? So the thing is, your kids are there, and it's easy for fathers to look and to get aggravated. Luke, how can you be so dumb? Josh, how can you be so dumb? Zane, how can you be so dumb? I know how Sam and Johnny can be that dumb. Stephen, I raised them, all right? But, you know, you wonder sometimes, you know, how can you be that dumb? Well, the point is, you can go ahead and provoke them until they're angry with you, okay? And it's a foolish thing to do. You're ordered not to do. You're ordered not to provoke them that way. Bill Randall talked about one of his kids one time running out of the room. He's getting ready to spank him. And, Mom, Dad's provoking me to wrath. Didn't work. Made the mother laugh. But the thing is, it discouraged. It's a discouraging thing to have a father, the one who should be encouraging you in what you do, and you know, and such. And again, it's that gotcha attitude. Boy, you got to be so careful about gotcha attitudes. You know, you send a kid to clean his room, and you walk up there, and boy, he's made the bed, he's put the shoes where they're supposed to be, and everything else. But he left that book on the shelf, and you told him yesterday not to leave it there. So you ignore everything he did right, and you stand there and yell at him because he left that book there. Hey, we're not going to put up with that. That's the gotcha attitude, okay? You want to discourage children? You go ahead and have the gotcha attitude. Walk away. Rub that thing on your chest. Talk about what a great man you are and such that you found this thing that they did wrong. Mrs. Randall used to say sometimes she'd walk into a room and almost pity her child because of the dumb thing they missed. But before she'd bring it up to them, she'd commend three or four things they did right. Boy, look at that. You got those shoes exactly right underneath the bed. Look at that. Boy, you got all those clothes hung up right. You know, and then, oh, gosh, you still left your towel here. But that's the only thing you've got here. You know, what a better way to bring it up with that child than have them just sitting there seething and discouraged and bitter because they worked so hard and you found the thing they did wrong. Well, God can do that to you. Yeah. Okay? God could do it to you. Verse 22, servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. That's one of the hardest things when you have a job, not doing things with eye service. What do you mean by that? A bunch of you are standing around talking. The boss comes by, so you look like you're working. That's called eye service, okay? You're trying to make it look like you're doing the right thing.
Heard that a few times at my job.
Yeah. And, you know, talk about when I ran Cool Temp Aluminum, I used to have a bunch of guys I called the Over the Hill Gang. They were guys who retired at 65 or 66 or whatever else, left their jobs, went home, and their wives explained to them in no uncertain terms how horrible the house was with them there every day. And, you know, and so these guys would come and say, hey, I know how to do these awnings. I know how to do these screens. Can I have some work here? And you know what? Best workers in the world. I'd go back there sometimes, and they're all sitting around the stove drinking coffee. You know what? It was time to sit around the stove drinking coffee. They're not working because they need money. They're working because they want to work. I'd go back other times, it's lunchtime, and they're all working feverishly. You know why? Because there's too much work. They couldn't get it all done. They're not going to take a lunchtime like that, just doing it. And you know what? Those men just knew when it was time to work. Never had to worry about it. They knew when to do it, when not to do it. And comfortable thing. Well, younger people have trouble with that. And, well, again, what you don't want to do is what's called eye service. That's what you don't want to do. You don't want to be this person that's just trying to look like you're doing right. Be honest about what you're doing, okay? If you're taking a break, sit down and say, I'm taking a break. What are you doing? I'm busy. Busy what? I'm busy resting, all right? I need the rest right now. If they say you can't do that, then you either have to decide if that's where you still want to work or work, do something different. So servants obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye servant as men please, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. So that idea that it's God watching you work, you're working as if God's seeing you do it. I always loved that story when Dale came in one day. He'd only worked at McDonald's a little while. He's the second string janitor, getting 10 hours a week. And he came in one Sunday morning and said, Pastor, I'm going to have a hard time staying awake. I said, why is that? He said, well, the main janitor went on vacation. I had a list of stuff I had to do last night and started to do it. The truck came in. No one else was there. I unloaded the truck all night. So this morning I went and just pencil whipped all the stuff, started to get to my car and realized, no, I can't sign my name. I did that stuff. He said, so I went back and did every single thing, but I didn't sleep. And I realized he's made it. He's made it. Okay. Do you think anyone would have noticed? Probably not. They're just used to people pencil whipping stuff or what God noticed.
Yes, sir. Okay?
He knows worse than that. Dale noticed.
Yeah.
Okay? Mm-hmm. And being able to live with yourself, knowing you do things the right way. And it has its own reward.
Yes, sir.
If you remember that, it just has its own reward to do things right. Mm-hmm. There's something about just knowing you did it the right way and going to bed with that satisfaction, waking up with that satisfaction. And if no one else in the world ever sees, you saw. You know what you did. Verse 23, and whatsoever you do it heartily as unto the Lord and not unto men. Remember the king that asked Elijah, and Elijah told him, you know, take this bunch of arrows and beat the ground. Mm-hmm. One, two, three. All right, Elijah. Elijah says, you should have done it many more times. Whatsoever you find to do it with all thine heart. Okay? Mm-hmm. Do it heartily as unto the Lord. And, you know, and he said, you should have done it many more times. You're going to beat the Syrians three times now, okay? And that's all they did. And after that, the Syrians swept him up. He said, if you'd beat them many more times, you'd have absolutely won. And it's just that principle again, that whatever you're going to do, do it right. Do it as unto the Lord. What if no one else in the world ever sees it? Do it right. I used to have a guy who was a siding installer, and I'd use him for another time to time. Steve Stanich was his name. And he came from a hard-drinking, rough crowd out of Ohio. And his father, really abusive to him. Steve, by this time, is in his mid to late 20s. And Steve was just absolutely the best siding installer there was. He could take a piece of metal and bend and break that perfectly. And just and one particular time, a man who was the coach to the Green Bay Packers had a house in Columbia, South Carolina. And he hired Steve. And it was one of these houses, like three stories, all these gables and everything else. And Steve had a way of absolutely wrapping every little thing and caulking every little thing. That coach watched him, and Steve came one time, and that coach had taken a ladder, and he'd gone over that entire house, and he had looked at every single place. I mean, places that you'd never get to. And he came back and told Steve, he said, you did that everywhere, didn't you? Steve said, yeah, that's the way I do it. Okay? That's the way I do it. Not just where you can see down here, but places you'd have never looked at. I've wrapped them absolutely perfectly, every one, this exact way. And you know what? That's just a great thing. That's just a kid that struggled with drugs and alcohol and everything else and women giving him trouble and a father that was abusive to him and all that. But he had that down. Okay? Just when you do something, do it absolutely right. Do it the right way. Do it the way it's supposed to. That's why Ruth Ann kicks me out when she's doing things like she did today. Get out of here. No, don't touch that stuff. You know what? She did exactly. She tore one little thing. Go get me those tweezers out of the bathroom. You know, she's got the glue and fix it exactly right.
The woman knows what she's doing.
She does, other than getting men. But, all right. Verse 24, knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. So you do what you do as unto the Lord, okay? As unto the Lord. But he that doeth wrong shall receive the wrong which he hath done, and there is no respect of persons. Let me tell you something. Don't be waiting for heaven or hell to see whether or not you're going to get the reward for what you've done wrong. You pay for it in this life. Look at the guys that are scofflaws. Look at the guys that think they're getting away with it. Their lives are miserable and they're hell. And somehow or other, they think they're living the life. Yeah, you know, and they're just full of depression and misery and awful things happening to them, and it's just a grievous, terrible life to live that way. And you know, and everybody said, well, maybe the Lord will reward me in heaven. No, you're getting your rewards right here on this earth. Okay, that's one thing the Jews have straight. Okay, live for the life on this earth and live it exactly right, and God will pay you back on this earth for this life. And you know what? We believe in an afterlife, we believe that it's going to go on there, but you know what? Having the wisdom to live this life the right way and having the rewards for having done it the right way. That's one of the things where I watch God in this church take certain families that come in here and they begin to get the reward of doing things right, okay? They begin to get the reward of you know, gosh, 3 months in a row, we've done it right. 2 years in a row, we've done it right. And, you know, and the things you're still doing wrong, it's still misery in your life and it's still awful in your life. And the things you do right, they go right. That's why Jesus Christ said, and Paul said, having promised not only that life, you know, but this life, not just the life which is to come. All right? Promising both lives to live life properly. All right. Chapter 4. Masters, give unto your servants that which is just and equal, knowing that you also have a master in heaven. And it goes back to this thing that when you're in charge and you're ruling something, give them what's just, give them what's equal. Those of you who have heard me talk about Peter Cartwright, the Methodist circuit rider, he talks about how the Methodism had taken a stand against slavery. And a man could be a Methodist and have slaves, but what they would require of him is that in the house of worship, they could not differentiate between who's free and who's not. Well, the thing was, imagine that we all come in here and we have a good Bible study and everything goes right. Then we go out again and I begin to put the whip back to Steve's or to Chris's back or to Steve's back, or, you know. And, you know, he's out there and they're calling him all sorts of names and, you know, making him sleep in a nasty little place and selling his wife downriver. And you know what? Kind of hard to do with people you lived with in the house of God. And so Peter Cartwright says that under his ministry, over 5,000 slaves were manumitted by Methodists who could not hold a man as a slave any longer that they had in the same house of worship with them. Okay, why? Because they use this verse here. Give unto him what's just and equal. Give unto him what's right. He was bitter against the abolitionists because he said they fomented such a attitude that it caused divisions where he wasn't allowed back into churches anymore that had slaves. And so it cut it off. And he saw the abolitionists as having destroyed that very movement in the Methodist Church. Kind of an interesting look. Verse 2, continue in prayer and watch in the same with thanksgiving. So why are you watching? Because not all prayers have been answered. Why are you thanking God? Because A, he's able, he is hearing you. So you thank him for that. Thank him for these things. And you know what? Some prayers take a long time to answer. Some prayers can be answered pretty quickly. But you thank him, learning that attitude of thanksgiving in prayer. Verse 3, with all praying also for us, that God would open unto us a door of utterance to speak the mystery of Christ, for which I am also in bonds. Now this goes back to this thing, if you think of the nature of prayer again. Here's the Apostle Paul, who God forbid him to go into Asia, opens doors over here, calls him unto Macedonia, backs him up with miracles, and yet still there are places he knows he's not going to get to if the people aren't praying. Where God put that out there, God understanding that priesthood of the believer, that he is regarded. And we've talked about this before. Job, his friends, God's talking to them all, but he tells the friends, you go to Job, he'll pray for you. Okay? Why can't you just hand it? Well, we're talking to you, God. Why can't you hand it? Because I didn't design it that way. I designed it that other people would pray for you. The king of Gerar, go to Abraham, he'll pray for you. Well, you're talking to me right now, God. Paul's talking to God. But God says, yeah, but I want them to pray for it. Okay? Has nothing to do with whether or not Paul's who he is supposed to be. It's just you're to pray for each other. Then it says, verse 4, that I may make it manifest as I ought to speak. Okay, he's talking about utterance. I'm in bonds for this. And he says, I make it manifest as I ought to speak. Now, let me tell you something. One of the most frustrating things is sometimes just sitting there, how do I say this to these people? How do I say something to them? Those of you who have children, aren't there things that you just can't quite seem to get through their heads? Okay? Somehow, and it's not that they're even in rebellion. Somehow or other, it's just not clicking what you're saying. Okay? It just isn't going where it's supposed to. So the Apostle Paul says, pray for me that I might speak, that I might be, it might be made manifest that what I'm supposed to say, you know, and that God give me that utterance. If you haven't noticed, there's differences in preaching. If you haven't, has anybody noticed in Sunday school and last night that Dale has a great refreshing in his preaching right now? Okay? You know, so again, you pray that God give this kind of thing, that he take the man of God, give him what he needs. And then he says in verse 5, walk in wisdom toward them that are without, redeeming the time. So you have all these people out there that you intermingle with. Relatives, people you work with, neighbors, they're all out there. You intermingle with them. And he says, walk in wisdom toward them. Walk in wisdom. You know, that's... Some of you have relatives who'd have a hard time believing that you're a person of faith. Okay? They have a hard time believing that. And some of you have neighbors that way or whatever else. And it just needs to be that you walk in wisdom towards those people. And you know what? There's certain people, they don't care what you do. They're just going to make up something. You're never going to satisfy those kind of people. And there's always certain idiots that no matter what you are, they'll think, oh, you're such a Christian. Okay? But it's that 80% in between. We're just rational people looking at you. Walk in wisdom towards them.
Pass.
What does it mean, redeeming the time?
For every bit of time that's out there, see to it that you've used it properly. Okay? Don't sit there and say, well, I have great swaths of time that I've wasted. John Wesley began writing his journals because in college, a professor said, if at the end of every day you write down what you've done, you'll start being ashamed of wasted time. And from that point on, for the rest of his life, he wrote a journal every night that he could. A lot of it he wouldn't publish, but when he did publish, he published 26 volumes. It's like the Encyclopedia Britannica, his journals. And there's a lot of it he just cut out. And hard on himself, and you know, things where he knew he was doing wrong, and he stayed, I'm doing wrong, but his reasoning again was that at the end of the day, he wanted to be able to prove that he used that day properly. That it wasn't just some, you know, nonsense where you wonder where all the time's slipping or whatever else. There's an old rule in any business organization or any church: if you want to get something done, find the busiest person you know and give it to them. That person will get it done. Okay? You find somebody who doesn't have a lot to do, you give it to them, it doesn't get done. That's why they don't have a lot to do. Okay? They can't make themselves do things. Whereas if you find a really busy person, give it to them, and you think of somebody in this church that's always doing stuff. You give it to that person, it'll get done. If you give Pastor Haynes something to do, it'll get done. Okay? It's just going to get done. Let me tell you another one, Ashley Ford. You give her something to do, it's going to get done. She might chew you out for it, all right? All right, she might give you a hard time. She might complain about what you are, but you go back, it's done, all right? I've had her in that office fussing with me, and I had to spend all night doing this, but it got done, all right? You know, she's busy. And so the thing is, redeeming the time. It's one of those things she has right, okay? And she does. Let anybody say what you want, but she's got that right. And, but again, it's that idea. Redeem the time. Don't let it waste.
So spend it wisely, so to say?
Yeah. Yeah. Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you might know how to answer every man. We go back to this thing again. I talked that story of Ruth Ann crying one time. So what's the matter? Yes, sir?
Why seasoned with salt in the Bible?
Seasoned with salt? Well, did you ever put salt on anything you're eating? Does it taste better? So when you talk, try to think about how to make your talk sound better. Okay? You could walk up to your mama and say, I want milk! Or you could season it with salt and say, Mama, could I have some milk, please? See, one way is with salt, the other way tastes bad. All right? That was a good question. All right. Remember that. Salt, Caleb. Just like Randy's mother used to say, filters.
Really?
Yeah.
Filters.
And you know what? For the most part, you got it right, Randy. But Ruth Ann, one time, she was crying, and I said, what's the matter? She just read that thing in the book of Luke 4, where it says, they all marveled at the graciousness of his speech. About Jesus Christ. And she's just crying. I said, what's the matter? She says, my speech is never gracious. Never. Well, you know what? Tanya, you've been going through some of that where God will take a verse and just shame you. You just sit there. It's just between you and him. No one else sees it. You just sit there so ashamed. And you know what? It's because he's about to do something about it. You and him are about to get that thing right. And, you know, the time has come and whatever. And here it's telling you how to do that. Let your speech be seasoned with salt. You know, there's certain things you can say. There's a show that Ruth Ann and I watch sometimes, and Tim will watch with us. It's called Leverage. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's on Amazon Prime. But the thing is, it's a guy's assembled a team of ex-crooks together, almost like the Dirty Dozen or something, and they try to do these virtuous things. And the one girl who can pick locks and climb anything and get into any place or whatever else, she just speaks brutally. You know, they're trying to talk to her and explain to her how to talk nicely to people. So they give a guy an apple. And she has an oars. Now, see if you can talk to him nicely. This is a practice to get him to give you the apple and him take the oars. I put a razor blade in that apple, she says.
Wow.
She sits down in a jury pool, a woman next to her says, oh, how are you? What did you eat today? They have her in a mafia wedding where they're trying to infiltrate this wedding. She's putting a dress on a girl, and she's, honey, you're just a little bit too heavy for this dress.
The one thing a guy can never say.
But, you know, and they make fun of just the idea she's just so blunt, and it's all kind of funny, but don't be that way, all right? And you say, well, I really told the truth, but the Bible says speaking the truth in love. You know, every one of us, God could give a list of 10 things about every one of us. I'll give you a moment. And give somebody permission to walk up and tell us those 10 things about ourselves, and it would just hurt so bad, and you could say it at the right time. That's why it says speaking the truth in love.
So where do you bring in tough love then?
First of all, for somebody that you owe that to them because of responsibility for them. You're their father, you're their friend. Something of that sort. Not everybody should do tough love on everybody.
Well, Joe, if anything, I would agree once in a blue moon, if that.
That's right.
I've had John speak tough love to me kindly. I know that doesn't sound like it mingles, but it does. Very kindly, very gentle. I've had the Lord speak to me through the Bible and tear me up one hill and down the other. Kind. They work together.
You just be reading a verse and suddenly you look at yourself and it's just that you're humiliated. Mm-hmm. You just, oh my goodness. You're just humiliated by what you just read. And why did God do that? Because he's trying to break you down and exalt him? No. He's trying to open your eyes to something so that you don't ever have to be humiliated about that again.
Yeah.
You know? I'll say to the Lord, oh, did you hear me say that? Yeah. So did everybody else in the room. What did they think? Just what you're thinking right now. You're an idiot. All right? And what can you do? You're the one that said it. You're the one that did it. All right. It says that you may know how to answer every man. Verse 7. All my state shall Tychicus declare unto you, who is a faithful who is a beloved brother and faithful minister and fellow servant of the Lord. So they would have these folks go travel from church to church. Didn't have Facebook in those days. Oh, how they suffered. Verse 8. Whom I have sent unto you for the same purpose, that he might know your estate and comfort your hearts. One of the things that men are to do when they travel from church to church. Verse 9. With Onesimus, a faithful and beloved brother, who is one of you, they shall make known unto you all things which are done here. Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, saluteth you. And Marcus, sister's son to Barnabas. Touching whom you receive commandments, if he come unto you, receive him. And Jesus, which is called Justice. So there's a man named Jesus who's not Jesus Christ. Who are of the circumcision, these only are my fellow workers unto the kingdom of God, which have been a comfort unto me. I mean, there's others, but they're the only ones been a comfort to me. Epaphras, who is one of you, a servant of Christ, saluteth you always, laboring fervently for you in prayers. And it says, laboring fervently for you in prayers, that you may stand perfect and complete in all the will of God. In other words, what do you mean by perfect? Again, doing everything the right way. Not that every time you do it was exactly right. Again, I go back to this thing of Alan Dershowitz, who's one of Trump's lawyers in the impeachment, I should say President Trump, I rebuke myself for that. President Trump's lawyers in the impeachment trial, and he's an old liberal from Harvard in the 60s and 70s, but he knew that that stuff was wrong, and he's a renowned lawyer, and so the second that he went on the President Trump bandwagon, the left began to throw stuff at him, and one of the things they had is that he committed adultery, and he said, I have a perfect sex life. Well, they mocked that. They rolled in the aisles over that. And he said, no, you don't understand. I'm not talking about perfect in the sense that I'm some Don Juan that anyone would want. He said perfect in the sense that I have never stepped outside of the bounds of marriage. Okay? I have never done that. Okay? And, you know, and he just meant that sincerely. It's just, it was the, it's the perfect use of the word perfect. Okay? So he says that you be perfect. In other words, stay within the bounds that God has for you, and you've learned how to live this church life. And yeah, you're all full of fault, and there's different things that don't go right here and there, but you're perfect and complete. You're doing what you're supposed to do. And then he goes on, and he says, verse 13, for I bear him record that he hath a great zeal for you, and for them at Laodicea, and for them in Hierapolis. And he says, Luke, the beloved physician, there's where we get that thing from, Dr. Luke, and Demas greet you. Salute the brethren which are in Laodicea, and Nymphas, and the church which is in his house. And when this epistle is read among you, cause it to be read among the church of Laodiceans, and that ye likewise read the epistle from Laodicea. And say to Archippus, does anybody know what epistle that would be, the one from Laodicea? There's one that says it, and I can't. I'd have to think about that, but there's one that was written from there. And say to Archippus, take heed to the ministry which thou hast received of the Lord, that thou fulfill it. If God's given you a ministry, do it. Okay? Tanya, God's given you ministries, fulfill them. Do those ministries, okay? And things go, you know, Luke and Zane, they have ministries. Do those ministries. Fulfill what you're given to do. Make sure that you do them, okay? Then he says, the salutation by the hand of me, Paul, remember my bonds, grace be with you, amen, written from Rome to the Colossians by Tychicus and Onesimus. All right, Father, I thank you for this chance to study the book of Colossians, and I pray now that you bless as we go on in 1 Thessalonians, and again, we pray that you keep the people in our church safe. Bless the Sunday service, and I pray this in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.